You are Locked On the NBA, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Welcome, everybody, to your favorite day of the week. I'm Anthony Irwin. I'm joined by Adam Mattis. Adam, it has been yet another, like, two, three-ish week break. How have you been? The last I heard of you today before we started recording was you, your daughter ate like a wad of wasabi.
That's true. My four-year-old today it's one of those parenting moments where it happens so quick. She just reached her finger into a thing of wasabi and just scooped it into her mouth. And there was like a 2-second delay before it just was like the tears.
Oh, you sent that message and I was just like, I felt it in my stomach.
Yeah.
And then
she was across the table. So it's like, it felt helpless because you're like, no, don't do that. Oh my God. Oh no.
You were in public?
No. Okay. But yeah, across the dinner table.
Oh, all right.
Well, it was pretty hilarious, but also somebody's going to call like child services or something over here. Like, it happened so fast, I couldn't react.
There's nothing you can do in that spot. Unless you have like Andre Iguodala's hands to slap down on it, but then you got another set of troubles.
So. We're also learning to ride a bike at the moment, and I'll tell you what. Watching other people teach their kids, I never thought about how stressful it is. But like watching your kid go down the street just out of control on a bike,
there's nothing.
I mean, they really just crash and crash and crash until they stop crashing, and it's very nerve wracking.
I would just like all the pads. Full lacrosse pads is the route I would go. Today's show, we have quite a bit to get to. We have Portland letting go of a 17-point lead in the third quarter.
Their best chance to get a win, in my opinion.
That was a tough one. That's the one where, like, if you're a Blazers fan, you're going to remember this one for a little while.
Yeah, it's going to sting.
Yep. So that's good. That's where we're going to start today's show. Second segment, we're going to talk about the lottery. I host Locked On Lakers, and this was Adam's idea. Adam wanted me to talk about the lottery. This was his call. And then finally, we're going to talk. I have it labeled KD slander in my notes here. It's not necessarily slander. We're just going to talk about how much more interesting the league is if he goes elsewhere, wherever that might be. With this, you know, with these few games without him as context for that, as evidence to that case. And then finally, we are heading into what promises to be a thrilling weekend in NBA playoff action. So we're going to give our predictions on that. Let's start, though, with the Golden State Warriors, like I said, beating the Portland Trail Blazers 114-111.
This was a fun game.
It was wild. There's just something about Oracle, right? Like Oracle with this specific group of guys is just wild, especially with Curry going off the way that he did. Magic Johnson after the game tweeted out the wrong number of points. I think he said that Curry had 39 points. Curry actually had 37. 4-14 from 3-point range, 11-22 from the field, 11-11 from the free throw line. These are the games. Like this is the first time all season. I saw this stat after the game. This is the first time all season that he scored back-to-back 35-point games.
We were robbed of it, and we're going to get into more of this later on. But you know, these Warriors are just so fun. And tonight, the story of the game for me, Portland got a phenomenal performance from their bench. They got 41 points from their bench. That's probably not going to happen again in this series. Nope. They got 18 made three-pointers. And I had to go back and look at this. So they shoot 18-39. That's 46.2% from the three-point line. And they lost. They made 18 threes. They'd only made 18 or more threes three times in the entire regular season. They won all three games. And actually, only one of those games was close. They were blowouts, the other two. So they're not going to get these types of performances. This is the best. This is, as you could put it, the bench played as well as they could. From the three-point line, they shot as well as they could. Mo Harkless was 2 of 2 from behind the three-point line tonight. Myers Leonard hit one. Rodney Hood hit two of them. Al-Farouq Aminu hit one. I don't think they're going to get a repeat performance like this from the three-point line or from their bench, and they lost. So to me, this was a really blown opportunity from Portland.
Hugely blown. The Warriors today, Adam, played 12 guys.
And I'll bet you couldn't name all of them.
Well, I have them in front of me, but no, like there's Quinn Cook, who I recognize. Is it who's D Jones?
Damian Jones?
Damian Jones, there you go.
Well, they had Alfonso McKinney in there for 8 minutes and 34 seconds, by the way. A little bit of production from him. He knocked down a three. But, you know, you
even
get,
Steve Kerr's like, who's this Jay Bell guy?
I don't think for that one. Come on now. But no, you know, they outshoot them by 27 points from the three-point line. Golden State gets outscored and they win a game. It's just it's amazing how many little markers there are that you can look at and say this probably won't happen again, and yet Golden State still found a way to kind of get it done. And I think there were really two big runs, one in the second quarter and one in the late third quarter that or maybe it was early fourth quarter that really defined this for Portland, where they just were throwing haymakers, and somehow Golden State was able to stay connected just enough to execute down the stretch. And I don't think it's demoralizing for Portland, because I don't think I think this is one of those series they came in with. Yeah, it's house money. Came in with nothing to lose. You get to go back home, and you know there's still a good chance that they're going to get one or maybe even both games back at Moda Center. But I just think it's discouraging when you have so many of those variables go in your direction, heavily go in your direction, and you still lose.
Couple numbers stand out to me from Portland's side. CJ McCollum finishes the game with 22 points on 23 shots. Damian Lillard finishes the game.
When was that, the Denver series, by the way? CJ McCollum just absolutely on fire every single game in that one.
he's regressed a little bit. And then Damian Lillard has 23 points on 6 of 16 shooting, 5 of 12 from three-point range, 10 assists, which is nice, obviously, but those two guys, Lillard finishes minus 7, McCollum finishes minus 9. Like, as much if you're a Portland fan, no, you're not going to get that kind of production from everywhere else, right? But you have to think eventually one of these guys is going to get going.
I don't know about that. And here it's part of this is a problem with Portland's roster. They have a defensive lineup and an offensive lineup, but they don't have like a two-way lineup. And you count on tonight you got the offensive production from Harkless and Amino, which you don't usually get. I know they only had 9 points and 12 respectively, but they straight spaced the court and knocked down their shots. But, you know, in this game they went really small. They played minutes with Seth Curry and Rodney Hood. Zach Collins was out there for 8 minutes, picks up 5 fouls, doesn't record another stat other than 2 turnovers. So he was just, you know, they couldn't really rely. I thought Myers Leonard was actually pretty good in this game, even though he was a minus 6 in 16:40. He knocked down a 3-pointer, had a couple big plays. But they just don't have, like, great lineups to really take advantage of what Lillard and McCollum can do. When you do go with those big lineups, as they did tonight with Seth Curry out there, they made this nice offensive run, but that's because they're hitting their shots. They're so vulnerable defensively in those lineups.
Yeah. I guess one of the things that I had said or I had thought heading into the series was it's not necessarily that Golden State is going to, you know, just take full advantage of Lillard or McCollum or whatever offensively. It's just that there's nowhere for those guys to hide. There's no rest for those guys. And you know, they've done this year after year after year with James Harden, where they just wear them down. And by the time you get to the fourth quarter, there's no legs. And we saw it on that last possession where Lillard didn't even get a step. Like, he was going sideways on Iguodala before he got stripped.
Yeah, I mean, part of this is just that Iguodala is an incredible defender.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And I mean,
and I actually Blazers think fans out there were like, and he gets to hand check like it was the 90s again.
Yeah, I mean, get over it.
I know.
And this was the other thing about it is just Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, Draymond Green, Andre Iguodala. That's an elite four-man pairing. I mean, those guys you talk about how important chemistry is. I mean, those guys clearly have as good as chemistry as anybody in the NBA. Defense, offense, they're just incredible. So to me, I don't know if I would really credit this game as much with like Portland running out of steam as much as it is. If you can stay connected the way that Golden State did, I mean, they were within 6 points or so. I don't know. In that fourth quarter, they were always sort of within striking distance. It got a little bit hairy there at the last with like 4 minutes to go, but they were still within striking distance. And then you just throw that great lineup out there. I just believe in it. If you can throw the remnants of that death lineup out there, you know, it's gonna make a lot of runs like the one they did tonight to close the game.
Yep. All right, we're gonna take a quick second here, and we're gonna come back to that chemistry point that you made. I want to come back to the point about Oracle with this group specifically.
Kevon Looney was great tonight. I wanted to say that Kevon Looney was very, very good tonight. He did his job.
It pisses me off to no end that he was just able to go back. That nobody was like, no, yeah, we'll just give that guy, we'll just give them another perfect center for their group. Anywho, we're gonna take a quick break here. When we come back, we're gonna talk about the lottery, and then we're gonna come back after that and focus back on this Warriors team and the Kevin Durant era and the way, not necessarily we're gonna look back on it, but I don't know, we'll figure out a way to contextualize it here in a second. Minutes, 6 of 6 from the floor, 14.7 boards. Good lord. Yeah. All right. let's go with the lottery and the flattened odds and all that comes with it.
Lottery night.
I wanted to start there. I wanted to start here. It was fun. And here's here's where I would now look. Rob Pelinka comes out after the fact and he says, "Yeah, I love the new rules. they're gonna do great."
Well, of course.
Yeah. Right. Right. And I had a nice little chuckle. I had to write about that for Silver Screen and Roll, and that was fun to go back and laugh at. But I'll put it like this. For me, one of the ways that I really tell the reach of the NBA is my wife interested in it? Right. She's like the definition of a casual fan.
Okay.
No other year would she care about the lottery. The Lakers had lotteries that they had a ton at stake. It didn't matter, right? It just for this one in particular, there was a ton of movement. I thought ESPN did a really good job. Like they cut to commercial at a perfect time. I would imagine there was a huge surge in interest. When they went to that final section there and they had the Knicks, they had the Lakers, they had those top four teams, and even Jen was
I love that you don't even mention Memphis and New Orleans.
No. I'm saying well, but it works out great because the small market teams get the two best players. The big market team draw the interest there. Right. I thought it worked out really well for the league. And Jen starts the lottery. She's kind of like looking back and forth. And I was live tweeting for Silver Screen and she was, asking questions about it. And I'm trying to do all these things at the same time. And then by the time that last segment hit and you had the top four teams, the top four picks that were going to be handed out there, she had put her phone down completely. And she was like enthralled by it. And I to me, like under no other circumstance would she have cared like that. And I think. For a league that is trying
lotteries to lotteries are fun.
Well, for a league that's trying to take its next step into like casual fandom, and try to continue to broaden their fan base, I thought that worked out perfectly.
I don't think it has anything to do with that, quite frankly. What I think it has more to do with the lottery's always been fun. When people throw out like, oh, they should just have a draft, an auction style when you enter the league or whatever, and other ways and try to get rid of the lottery. I think what's great about the draft and the lottery system right now? It's not that it's like morally great or great for competitive balance. It's just freaking fun.
It's fun.
Like the lottery is so fun, and you're the truth that basketball number one pick means so much, so much. And only one team can get it. And one of the things I like about flattening the odds, the Cleveland Cavaliers desperately needed the number one pick. The Pelicans desperately needed it. Memphis desperately. It wasn't – one of the things I hated about the old system was it presumed that the worst two or three teams needed that number one pick more than the fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth worst team. Every team that's in the lottery right now needs this pick desperately. I mean, they're not going to win a championship unless they somehow acquire it. Why did we have to have such steep odds? I like that it's flat. I like that. I don't like that the Lakers moved up, but I like the fact that a team in the position of the Lakers in that 11th spot had the ability to move up the way that they did. I thought it was cool.
Here's another way that I'll frame the point that you're making too, because I think they're similar points, not quite the same, but they're similar. Right now in professional sports, we're reaching this point where the balance of entertainment and competition is a little out of whack, right? I thought the process to me was the epitome of the balance of entertainment and competition being completely out of whack.
The one thing I'll say is that fans really attach themselves to the process. So I get what you're saying from a broad standpoint, but at least it was a direct. I think a lot about building a franchise and a rebuild in the NBA is about selling a narrative.
Selling the
and
rebuild.
They sold the process just like so well that it was like, yeah, we're terrible for a reason. This is great.
That's fine. But I also can see why like some Philly fans would say, no, this isn't great. I'm kind of sick of this. And I think we're seeing it with like load management in baseball right now. You have like Craig Kimbrell isn't even signed because those teams are reluctant to give up draft picks to sign him. Right. Like this idea of good players not even being in the sport right now in baseball is to me, again, another example of the balance of entertainment and competition being thrown out of whack. And with flattening the odds, I think you inject some of that entertainment back into the sport here. And I think the further teams go into leaning into competition, which they should be, it's a competitive league, I think the more the league should do to try to regulate a little bit more entertainment into the proceedings. And I thought this was a great way to do it. It was especially a great way to do it because the Lakers wind up fetching themselves a top four pick, falls out of the sky. It was great.
I will say it's better than having the 11th pick, but you know, and I'm not the biggest draft guy, especially this time of year. I haven't fully turned my attention there just quite yet, but you know, I don't even know who the fourth pick is. I know the top three are, you know, pretty consistent. The fourth one, I don't know how valuable that one is in this specific draft.
Yeah, there are three guys who the Lakers are kind of focused on as of right now.
In that spot.
Yeah.
Well, let me ask you this though. I mean, the Lakers obviously prime trade candidates. I mean, they've got LeBron James. They got to go. They don't need to bring along some dude that's going to take 3-4 years. So, what are the odds in your perspective that the Lakers hold on to that pick?
Much lower than of them trading it. Right. Like I did the show for Locked On Lakers, and I gave the three paths they could go forward. And in terms of likeliness, they are not trading back, right? They are not doubling down on this draft. They aren't going to try to go out and get an extra pick to get another right. young player. That's definitely not happening, yeah. right? The next least likely thing is that they use this pick. And the three guys are Darius Garland, DeAndre Hunter, and Jarrett Culver. Those are the three guys that seem to be make the most sense in those spots. But again, they aren't so good that it's worth passing up on reigniting talks with New Orleans for Anthony Davis or starting talks with the Washington Wizards for Bradley Beal. That to me is the most likely outcome here, that they use this fourth pick and they either try to acquire Anthony Davis. And one of the things that I think really helps them is that the Pelicans hired David Griffin and gave him autonomy. I just had Jake Madison on from Locked On Pelicans for Locked On Lakers, and he says Gail Benson is taking your hands off, and if the best offer comes from the Lakers, then that's the offer he's going to be allowed to make. And I think in this case, it's more likely than not that the best offer does come from the Lakers.
Yeah, maybe not. I don't know. I think the idea that Zion now is there changes sort of what I guess makes sense for them to be looking for. They can be a lot more patient now, especially if Anthony Davis wants out. You
they
can
don't
get
have
a
to worry
haul.
About selling tickets.
They don't have to worry. Yeah. So for me, I just wonder. I don't know. Everything I hear coming out of there is I think that I don't see that avenue happening for the Lakers. So the fourth pick certainly helps things, but it's. To me, it's right below the line of like really moving the needle of really helping make that package intriguing.
What helps What helps is that the Knicks don't have any good players to offer as along with the third pick. Like that helps,
and it might just be an Oklahoma City scenario with Paul George, where just a team comes out of nowhere and is the one that gets him. But I will say, and this is my problem with the lottery. Here's one of the things that I think really is tough. New Orleans and Memphis get better. They're in the same division and in the same conference, and it happens to be the West. Every year it just seems like all the best players keep coming West. And if there was one other lottery reform, I think I maybe we'd be pro is like making it go back and forth East-West, 1, 2, 3, 4. So in this one, it would go New Orleans. And even if Memphis won, it's like, I'm sorry, New York bumps you because they're in the East. Just we got to have some kind of balance because – last year was Doncic and Bagley and Jared Jackson and Ayton. I mean, it just happens every year that all the talent keeps staying in the West. It's absurd.
Yeah. Yeah. And what's wild is that I think that has a lot to do with the fact that there are so many mediocre Eastern teams, right? Like it was there were, what, six teams that all had a chance up to the last like few nights that had a chance at the playoffs in the East. And I don't even know how you would even fix that, really. We're going to take a quick second here. And when we come back, we're going to get back to talk about the Warriors a little bit. I'm just going to come out and say it. I think the NBA needs Kevin Durant to leave. I just think the league is a lot more interesting if he's not on the Warriors. Sorry, yeah. Warriors fans. I have it labeled on my notes here as KD slander. It's not slander. What we're going to do right now isn't slandering. We're not even going to criticize Kevin Durant, the player. We're going to criticize the decision, right? And what it might have robbed us of over the last, 3-4 years or so. But Kevin Durant, the player, is inarguably one of the better players that I think we're ever going to see, right? I want to start here, though. That Oracle Arena, when it's Steph who is igniting a run, when it's Clay who is catching fire, when it's Draymond Green hitting one of his like three-pointers a month, right? Like that's when Oracle really invests itself in that run, in that moment.
Oracle doesn't love KD, man.
It doesn't. Yeah.
I think every sort of evolution of the league, including these sort of meta evolutions where players are trying out these new, super teams and what comes with it, I think it always evolves and people take notes. And one of the notes has to be, I have to imagine, if you're standing on the outside, you look at it and you go, there's two sides of the coin. KD is likely going to win. I mean, he's won two. Maybe he'll win a third championship. So in order of like rings, it'll be a success. But another one of like, yeah, but you're winning them when everybody else sort of you're sort of the prima donna almost. You're the guy that everybody just sort of accepts. And the biggest thing is that the Golden State Warriors and Steph Curry in particular, the Steph Curry Draymond Green dynamic is just so fascinating. It's pure basketball bliss, in my opinion. KD makes them better, but he makes them a lot more boring. It just takes away some of that, like what makes them so special. Not always. I mean, there's been games where the whole, even KD is mixed with that group in a way that's just like incredible and unstoppable. I think that their peak with Kevin Durant is so much higher than their peak without him. It would be absurd to argue against that. But just the fun factor and the way Steph comes to life. You mentioned he hasn't had back-to-back 35-point games until suddenly he needs it and then he has it. It's just, to me, it's we've been robbed the last 2.5, now 3 seasons. We've been robbed of what this makes this Golden State team so special. And I am excited and hopeful for him to go somewhere else.
Me too, especially to the East, to the point that you finished the last segment on. Him going East to me, him going to New York, I'm not the biggest New York Knicks fan,
Right.
But I think that's the kind of thing that the NBA needs, not just from the standpoint of what you and I are talking about now, but can you imagine the drama that comes out when KD plays against Golden State next year, goes into Oracle? He knows they don't love him the way that they love Steph. He knows that. He's cognizant of it. That's why he makes all those burner accounts. Yeah.
I think KD is the most talented player in the league. And I mean that sincerely. And this is a league that has Giannis and LeBron and Kawhi. I mean, there's so much talent in the league right now. I think he's the most talented. But here's the thing. I'm not convinced he can lead a team. And I know that's weird to say because he just won back-to-back finals MVPs, but, I mean, he's playing on one of the best teams of all time. There's a real chance that the Warriors could win this year without him, and that would be the craziest thing. I wouldn't pick it. I think that both teams in the East are so good that they would need a full-strength Golden State, but at least it's something we could throw out there. They're 2-0 right now in the Western Conference Finals without him. They're 29-1 with Curry and without KD. I mean, it's at least possible that they could win this without him, and I'm just not sure that – so much of basketball, of success in the NBA is not about basketball. It's about the other stuff. I mean, he checks every box basketball-wise, defense, offense, scoring one-on-one. He's got everything. But, does he have the other parts? We saw Kyrie Irving. You see what the Celtics did last year without him. You add him. He makes them better because he's talented. But the other stuff, kind of detracts and it becomes a net negative. I don't know that KD has learned all of the lessons that you typically learn en route to being a finals MVP. He just happened to be in a vehicle of the Golden State Warriors that didn't require him to know those things.
Yeah. Yeah. With in a game that only has five players on each team on the court at the same time, there's going to be more room for that stuff, what you're talking about, right? Like baseball, that stuff like barely matters. You know, it's like nine guys out there and somebody gets a hit, somebody else runs fast enough to score from second. Like that's, you know, it's, you know, there's some chemistry at second base when you're turning a double play or whatever. But for the most part, there's just, you know, it's.
But it's not even just chemistry. It's how do you bring a team along throughout the little beats of a season that, you know, just knowing the right buttons to push and when to be selfish and when to be selfless, when to like push a guy and when to like pick him up. It's just all of those things that are so important for a team that with this Golden State Warriors team, they've literally fought in front of our eyes and in front of our camera. It doesn't matter because they're so good that some of those things that typically would ruin a team don't even matter. And that's all I'm saying. I mean, there's rumors that he'll go to New York and, you know, oh, maybe they'll have RJ Barrett and Kevin Knox and Mitchell Robinson, and you add Kyrie, and it's like, yeah, but do we really have evidence to suggest that both Kyrie and Kevin Durant know how to treat those other guys to get the best out of them?
The tire fire that could be.
Of course, yeah. I mean, so to me, it actually would be really fascinating. And look, I have strong opinions that the answer to that is no, but you know, nonetheless, I would be really interested to see it. And also for him, I think it would be a real area of growth, a growth opportunity for him to kind of grow into to earn that number one player in the world ranking rather than just have it, because of course he would earn that or he would be called that in Golden State.
Yeah, that's a fair way to put it. Quick note, as we're recording right now, Adrian Wojnarowski is reporting that the Wizards have been granted permission to discuss the franchise's president of basketball operations job with Denver Nuggets president Tim Connolly. League sources tell ESPN meeting is expected this week. There's no way he takes that job, right?
Oh, I think actually you have – so I am – you know, obviously I cover the Nuggets. You're Locked On Nuggets, so I can talk to this. And Woj followed it up by saying Denver's ownership's willingness to allow the executive of the year candidate, which Tim Connolly is, to meet with the Wizards is based on Connolly's Maryland roots – he's from Baltimore – and extenuating family considerations, plus confidence that Nuggets GM Arturis Karnisovas could assume full leadership if necessary. Now, there's a couple things at play here. Of course he would take this. If you stay with the Denver Nuggets are sort of in do-or-die mode, right? This was the last year where there was no expectations for them beyond making the playoffs and putting up a good fight, which they did. But going forward, you got to see the tough progress. They need to be back where they were this year or better. They need to – that championship window is really tight. Whereas in Washington, he probably signs a long-year deal. It's more of a trust-the-process scenario. First of all, maybe more money. I mean, I think a big part of him going somewhere else would be that they would pay him even more. That's how you lure a guy away from a current job. But also, I mean, you go into Washington, what is the expectations for Washington over the next three seasons? There are none.
Yeah.
It's literally just create a plan that maybe starts to show the tiniest little signs of life to it. So to me, the opportunity to make more money, go home, to be surrounded where he has deep roots in Baltimore. He's a well-known person in Baltimore. And then on top of that, this the job security. I think to me, it would be a no-brainer. The big question is Denver's allowing it to happen. And I find that part at least a little bit interesting.
Didn't they also – they just lost another executive or another – didn't they?
Denver?
Oh, somebody else. If they didn't lose them, they interviewed somewhere else, right? Who was the?
No, they not a front office person. Not a front. I mean, they've had
assistant coach, you know, maybe.
Calvin Booth has been interviewed. Yeah, two assistant coaches have interviewed with the Cleveland Cavaliers, including Wes Unseld Jr., Jordy Fernandez, who was a coach their G League team for a while. So a couple, you know, players like that. But you know, that's a sign of, in my opinion, from my perspective.
This is the point I was about to make. Go ahead.
This is a good organization. That means that you've been doing things right. And I think everybody looks at Denver. They didn't have high draft picks. They didn't have anything going in their favor 5 years ago when he took over. And you look at where they are now, and just they're not just set up for this year's success, but for years going forward. And I think there's a reason that Michael Malone's staff has been poached every single year. There's a reason the front office has been getting interviews around the league. So to me, that it's a good sign. The question is, Denver are the Kroenkes being cheap by not wanting to pony up for Tim Connolly, or do they sincerely believe that losing him would be okay as Woj is sort of – you have to assume Woj is getting that information from somewhere inside the organization. Yeah. So do they really sincerely feel that Arturis could fill that role and maybe even do a better job or as good of a job? That's a big question that the optics of it, knowing the Kroenke's history and knowing that they allowed Masai Ujiri to walk after winning Executive of the Year, the optics of it, I think, would be very difficult for the Kroenke's to overcome, whether or not they had good cause to believe one way or the other.
Hey, Lakers, nobody has cared about any of your executives now for like a decade. Maybe take note of this kind of thing.
That's true. Nobody's trying to poach Kalinka at the moment.
All right, last thing. Let's wrap on this. The weekend that is to be is going to be fascinating. So I think in both of these series so far, we've had a couple games. We have had a few games here where the home team has not played as well as they could. The opposing team either played about as well as they could or got performances that might not be replicable moving forward. And in both cases, the home team has taken care of business nonetheless. Do you think how do you predict this weekend goes? Do you think we see commanding leads coming out of this weekend?
I do. I certainly think in the Western Conference, I mean, Portland has to do everything well and get sort of a bad night from Golden State. And going home, they're a fantastic home team. So Portland, you know, splitting, I think, is certainly very likely. But will they get both games? They play on Saturday and then again on Monday. Will they get both of those games in Portland? I just have a hard time believing that because the talent discrepancy between these two teams, in my opinion, is really, really wide. The other series is where it's
even ESPN was like, gosh, we can't get more games of Warriors Rockets. Did you see that before the game?
Oh, they had the
images.
Yeah.
But yeah, how about I would agree with you, by the way. I agree with you that either it's 3-1 I think it's 3-0 Warriors by the time this weekend is over. I actually think the Warriors win game one here.
I agree. I actually agree with that one. But the other one, that's the one that's really interesting to me. On the one hand, Toronto came out punching in that game. They won the first quarter. They lost the next three and kind of got worse as the game went on. And I just believe in this Milwaukee team. I think that they're I really like Toronto. I think that they're a fantastic team. But I just think Milwaukee has a perfect blend. I just think they're the perfect Giannis team. And to me, that you look at some of the plus minuses from that game, as much as they got down early, Giannis a +8, Middleton a +10, Brooke Lopez, who's been fantastic, a +7. I think to me, those guys, Milwaukee sort of has more of the answers, but I will say, I think that series will be a long one and, there'll be adjustments, and the adjustments in that series in particular, I think, are going to be really, really fascinating.
Yeah. Bart, do you think Brooke Lopez's ringtone at this point is like money, 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 money? he has to be thrilled about how this offseason is going to go.
I'm a big fan of players evolving their game in the twilight of their career. Andre Iguodala has given himself an extra 8-9 years in this league because he's been like, yeah, I'll be a bench guy. I'm an all-star, but yeah, I'll be a bench guy. I'll play defense and just kind of take on that role, low usage on offense, stand in the corner. Brooke Lopez, who was cast off by the Lakers, is now this three-point specialist who's actually like a super smart player and a versatile scorer inside, outside. I mean, just I'm such a big fan of it.
Yeah, me too. I actually think I think this one, so they have what? They have two games over the weekend, right? Portland or Milwaukee and Toronto.
Yeah, they've got two games, yep.
I think it winds up being, man, I think it's 3-2-1 by the end of this weekend. I think Toronto gets game one in Toronto.
Yeah, I don't know which one, but I would agree with that. I think the odds are that it's 2-1. I think that series is going to be a long one.
Me too. All right. Well, that'll do it for this episode of the Locked On NBA podcast. Exciting, thrilling weekend ahead. And then what promises to be, I would imagine, one of the better final series that we can really look forward to either way. But let's get done with these first. We'll see how our predictions go. If we're wrong about any of this, Adam seems to think Tim Connolly is a goner. Tim Connolly, if you may. If any of our predictions are incorrect, we will forever feel sorry for our sins. But for now, have a great weekend. We'll talk to you guys next week.